Welcome to the Uncrowned Wrestling Show. It is WrestleMania week. It is Tuesday, April 14th, 2026. I am Jason Solomon. We are 4 days out from WrestleMania, and the hottest angle that they are booking is south of the border. And it includes two men who aren't even on the WrestleMania card. We had this incredible angle on the AAA TV show Saturday night in Mexico City. Honestly, as hot of an angle as WWE has booked in ages. I mean, the fans in the building were losing their minds for this with El Grande Americano 1 and El Grande Americano 2. We had the OG El Grande Americano, Chad Gable, and we had the hottest babyface in all of AAA and probably one of the hottest babyfaces in all of Mexico right now, El Grande Americano Kaiser, Ludwig Kaiser. These two don't like each other very much. And it was just mass chaos. I mean, this had more heat behind it than anything on the WrestleMania card this weekend. And that includes Brock Lesnar against Obafemi, which is the closest thing that I could think of. But earlier in the show, and this was the show where Penta successfully defended his Intercontinental title against El Hijo del Vikingo. But there was a match earlier in the show with Americano Gable, where he defeated Octagon Jr. And then they shot an angle where he went over to, I guess this guy was a comedian who was in the front row and he attacked the comedian. So there was a brawl that just ignited between Americano Uno and Americano Dos that really just ran until the very end of the show and they all came back out. But they couldn't keep these two guys apart. As pull-apart brawls go, we get a lot of pull-apart brawls in WWE. We get a lot of pull-apart brawls in wrestling, especially over the last several weeks. And this was, I mean, easily the best of them all. This is one where it felt like these guys really wanted to murder each other. And they were laying it in. They were going at each other in the worst way. Fast forward to the end, and they have to be separated again. And Kaiser issues the challenge. Mask versus mask. Which was not accepted, but, you know, clearly the match is going to happen. It is rumored. Now, it's not happening at WrestleMania. Nor should it happen at WrestleMania. There was a point in time many weeks ago where I said, man, they got to pay this thing off at WrestleMania. You got to do a mask versus mask match on that show. And you have to have Gable unmasked. This gimmick, this belongs to Ludwig Kaiser. He is so over right now. I mean, he is like, he's a hero down there in Mexico. He's on the best run of his entire career. You can't end that. Gable doesn't need this. He doesn't need to be under the silly mask anymore. So when they do have the mask, Gable should you know, take the L and get the mask off. But there was a point in time where it seemed like, okay, this should be saved for WrestleMania. And now I feel the exact opposite way. All the heat is in Mexico. You do this match in front of an American crowd, it's going to fucking die a death. So, you know, to do it down there is what makes the most sense in front of that audience. And right now the match is being rumored for the Noche de los Grandes show in Monterrey on May 30th. I don't know that that's officially been announced, but that is the rumor going around. Who would have thought that out of everyone, Paul Levesque, Shawn Michaels, that The Undertaker would be the one in the running for Booker of the Year? Who would have ever thought that The Undertaker would have a booking role in a Lucha Libre promotion? I mean, that'd be like waking up one morning to find out that Ghetto had been replaced as the head booker in New Japan Pro Wrestling by Jake the Snake Roberts. Like, Jake's got a great mind for the wrestling business. I don't know about that being the spot, you know, for him. Although, to be honest with you, I'm not sure he would do much worse than some of the decisions that Ghetto has made with New Japan in recent years. But we're going to keep it simple this week. WrestleMania. I've got a full preview and predictions, including what went down last night on the final Raw before the big event. We'll incorporate that into the preview. And more thoughts on this horrendous Pat McAfee angle. There are some people defending this. I don't understand this at all. AEW held its Dynasty pay-per-view on Sunday. I have not had the chance to talk about it anywhere yet. So I'm looking forward to doing so here on Uncrowned. And I have an update on another story that I talked about a few weeks ago, that supposed stabbing at an independent show. Turns out there was a casualty in all this, and it wasn't an actual person. So we'll talk about that. But let's get into it. I mentioned the Pat McAfee angle. Let me just briefly talk about this, because WWE has completely, or TKO, I guess you could say, has completely upended their Night 1 WrestleMania main event. Their Night 1 WrestleMania main event was a very simple story involving Cody Rhodes and Randy Orton. And Ari Emanuel, as the rumors go, wanted Pat McAfee to be a part of this show for various reasons, not just because he represents him, he's his agent, but he also is obviously a pretty big personality on ESPN. WrestleMania, or parts of WrestleMania, are airing on ESPN for the first time this year, right? Corporate synergy. And so they wanted to find a way to incorporate him into the show, even though this was not an idea that originated from Paul Levesque or the creative team, but they were tasked with finding a way to incorporate him into the show. So we had that big reveal a couple of weeks ago, right? Who's been on the phone with Randy Orton? And it turned out to be Pat McAfee, which of course made no sense, but this was the role they chose for him. So he went heel and he kicked Cody Rhodes in the crotch and he aligned with Randy Orton under the guise that we are here to save the wrestling business because, and I'm paraphrasing here, but this is what he said, the product sucks and the roster sucks and the champion sucks. He's a corporate stooge. And somehow WrestleMania this year is not sold out. And so we're here to save wrestling. We're here to save the business. So then Pat was back on SmackDown this past Friday. And it feels very much right now like it's the Pat McAfee show. We got the Pat McAfee show on ESPN during the week, right? It's a Monday through Friday. Well, now we have it on WWE SmackDown as well. This feels more like a battle between Cody Rhodes and Pat McAfee. He has dominated over the last couple of weeks so much of this precious real estate that was left, not a whole lot, leading into WrestleMania. We still have not had a single face-to-face in-ring promo between Cody Rhodes and Randy Orton, the two men who were in the main event of WrestleMania this Saturday. But boy, we sure had Pat McAfee spouting off a whole lot on Friday night and going face-to-face with Cody, and then we had a little bit of Randy Orton there at the very end of it all. But again, more inside talk about Marks and the IWC and him going off on CM Punk, as Punk had made comments about him last Monday in his little pipe bomb promo. So now he's dragging CM Punk into this. And then Cody came out and this just went on and on. And I'm watching this and I'm going, this is just some awful television. And I'm not even saying that Pat doesn't know how to get heat. You know, he's going out there, he's healing on the crowds, he's insulting them. So of course he's going to get booed for it. And if the goal here was to not get Randy Orton cheered, then congratulations, because the reaction to Randy Orton, it was not cheering. It was not overwhelming booing. It was sort of indifference. Now they're just, at least on Friday, not really reacting to him at all. Maybe that'll change this week. But I'm like, okay, you're putting all the heat on Pat, and Randy's not getting much in the way of heat at all now. Now, maybe they didn't want him cheered before, but I would have much rather had the fans going nuts for Randy Orton going into WrestleMania than not. Because people want to see him win number 15. There's nothing you could really do to change that. But they feel like, okay, well, if we got to use Pat, then maybe we'll use Pat as a useful tool to try to put heat on Randy and get Cody cheered. I guess that's one of the things that they're going to try. The main reason that Pat McAfee was on SmackDown on Friday night and why I thought that this entire segment was just so pathetic was they had him in the days leading up to SmackDown promising a massive surprise. That was the word he used, a massive surprise. And the massive surprise, and I'm not even bothered by the fact that it was, you know, a letdown because you kind of come to expect it with these supposed big surprises. But the big surprise turned out to be that he picked up the phone and called up Ram Trucks, the official sponsor of WrestleMania 42, and said, hey, would you be willing to shave off or pay 25% of every ticket purchase from now until the end of Raw this Monday night for night one of WrestleMania? Because ticket prices have been so astronomical. That's why tickets haven't been moving the way they did last year. So now they've incorporated it into the storyline where they had to go to the title sponsor of the show in storyline and say, hey, they're going to help you buy your ticket by shaving 25% off the price only for a few days and only for night one, because night two looks like ass. And I don't know why anybody would buy tickets to night two. That's what Pat McAfee said. Meanwhile, they have more tickets sold for night two than they do night one. But that was the whole purpose of it. To have him in the storyline be the hero and say, hey, look at me. I got you a big ticket discount for night one tickets. Meanwhile, he's supposed to be a heel. He's coming out there and calling people scumbags and he's insulting the Marks and everything else. But then he turns around and it's like, what are we doing here? So are we supposed to thank Pat McAfee and cheer for Pat McAfee now? The majority of the people watching the television show aren't going to Las Vegas anyway. They don't give a shit how much those WrestleMania tickets cost. But I'm sure he'll be a hero to some because they've, you know, given him credit for it in the storyline. But just if you look at it from a storyline perspective, it doesn't even make any sense. Is that supposed to get him cheered? I don't know. I don't know what they're going for here. But when it was all over, Cody Rhodes got laid out and Pat McAfee was the one who left with the WWE Championship over his shoulder. Not even Randy Orton, it was Pat McAfee, who now has the title with him on his show. It's kind of laying there in the background. This is an awful, awful angle, and I don't know where it's going. And I will absolutely give it its props and just do if it turns out to be some great grandiose idea that could lead to very interesting television leading into the summer. That would be great. If this can morph into something that I actually care about and can invest in and be excited about and make SmackDown a better show, then great. That's not what this is. We'll see how it plays out at WrestleMania. We got no choice, but what they've done so far, these segments, I think, have been atrocious. And that leads into WrestleMania 42, which is this weekend back at Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas for the second straight year. That doesn't help. Running the same venue in the same market 2 years in a row, as expensive as it is. No wonder they're not moving as many tickets. Tickets, tickets, tickets. Everyone's been talking about the ticket sales, which you have to talk about now because they've incorporated it into the storyline. We had CM Punk last week on TV, lower the ticket prices. And then we had Pat McAfee doing a ticket offer on Friday. So all the people who don't like hearing about ticket sales, now don't blame me, you blame WWE. They've turned it into a whole big story. But at last check, over 42,000 tickets for WrestleMania Saturday and over 43,000 for WrestleMania Sunday. And look, that is still a combined 85,000 plus between both nights, which is nothing to sneeze at. They're going to make a lot of money off this show, plus the tax incentives and everything else. But those numbers are nowhere close to what they were last year in a venue that can fit up to 60,000 or so with the stage. They're not going to come anywhere close. But it all kicks off with SmackDown before we get there on Friday night with the annual Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, which I am predicting will be won by Royce Keyes. We don't even know who's in the Battle Royal, but Royce Keyes made his debut finally on television Friday night on SmackDown. And I just look at this and go, well, why would you wait until the week before WrestleMania to debut this man on television unless he was going to go in there and get a big win in the Andre Battle Royal? So he's my pick. And we're getting a street fight between the MFTs and the Wyatt Six. And the less said about that, the better. But I'm looking forward to the Hall of Fame. The Hall of Fame ceremony kicks off after SmackDown. That'll be starting at 12 Eastern time, so midnight Eastern. And evidently it is going to be earmarked for about 3 hours. It'll be streaming live on ESPN Unlimited. Yes, PW Insider says it is marked for 3 hours. We have Stephanie McMahon, AJ Styles, Demolition, Sid Vicious, Bad News Brown, and Dennis Rodman all being inducted. It's a strong class on the whole. Sid and Bad News, they will not be getting proper inductions because they are part of the legacy class. But then it's WrestleMania Saturday. First hour of this show is simulcasting live on ESPN2. It's only the first hour. After that, you've got to watch it on ESPN Unlimited or however it is that you watch these WWE events. The two ESPN matches will be the Usos and LA Knight taking on Logan Paul, Austin Theory, and IShowSpeed. That's actually going to be opening the show. And they had a vignette on Raw last night showing Speed in a training session with Logan Paul and Austin Theory. And Speed was still very nervous. I don't know about this. And by the end of it, he was just uber confident. He was doing backflips off the top rope. He had somebody in a Boston Crab that had to pull him off the guy. Speed is a very athletic guy. I think he's entertaining. He's kind of the one celebrity in all this celebrity mania that we have had over the last several weeks where I don't really mind him being involved. I think it could be entertaining. You know, it's a six-man tag on the show. He's not dominating the show. It's not like a main event angle or anything like that. So I think that, you know, him being a part of this, there could be some fun moments in here. I am going with the Usos and LA Knight to pick up the win. That's going to be opening the show. And that will then lead into the unsanctioned match. Only the second such match that we have ever had in WrestleMania history. First one was between Triple H and Seth Rollins. That was back at WrestleMania 33. But it's Drew McIntyre against Jacob Fatu. And I'm going with Jacob Fatu in this match, if for no other reason, because I believe coming out of WrestleMania, Drew is going to be filming a role for this new Highlander movie. He was cast as the main character's brother. So I think he's going to be going away for a little bit. But honestly, I mean, this should be a win for Jacob. I know Drew's had a tough time of it. He won the championship, then he quickly lost the championship. We thought he was going to be in the WrestleMania main event, then he wasn't going to be in the WrestleMania main event. This really should be a win for Jacob Fatu. I still maintain that it wasn't McIntyre who kicked his teeth out, and we'll find out later on that person was Randy Orton. I'm still standing by that. Then again, be careful what you wish for, I guess, right? Because the way things are going, they may end up giving credit to Pat McAfee for it, and Randy Orton will just be kind of a background player in the story. We have Stephanie Vaquer defending her Women's World Championship, going into here what I believe is her first WrestleMania, and she's the defending world champion against Liv Morgan. Now, we had a very scary segment on the show last week. I touched on it on Uncrowned last Tuesday. Liv Morgan was in the back having a conversation with Roxanne Perez. Stephanie attacked Liv from behind. Liv bumped heads with Roxanne very hard. I thought Roxanne was dead. She went down. As it turned out, both women were supposedly placed in concussion protocol. Obviously, Liv does not have a concussion, or if she did, she's been cleared because she was doing physicality on the show last night. But boy, did she have one hell of a goose egg on her head. I mean, it was a violent, violent collision. And so she's okay, but she showed up on Raw last night, and she was an absolute raving psycho. I mean, she came out there, she eyes bugging out of her head, screaming at the top of her lungs. She looked like she hadn't slept in days. It looked like she still had a bit of a bump on her head. It was hard to tell with the hair covering it. But she was just ready to murder this woman, and they had to be pulled apart. And she had some very unflattering things to say about Stephanie and her mother, so they went at it again. This is one of the few matches on this WrestleMania card, either night, that really feels like, okay, this is personal. Okay, these two people really don't like each other. Okay, they really want to get at each other in the worst way. They've done a good job. Liv in particular has done a very good job with this. And I just don't see her losing this. I think she's going to walk out the new Women's World Champion. I think there's storyline potential there with her and Raquel Rodriguez, which, of course, Raquel's her best friend, part of the Judgment Day. For how much longer, though? Right? For how much longer? I think that there's a match there in the future down the road for them to do. Maybe even something with Liv and Roxanne. Yeah, I had said earlier this year on my show that I thought Roxanne was my early favorite to win the Women's Money in the Bank briefcase. And I still feel that way. And if Liv is the champion, and if Roxanne does win the briefcase, now Money in the Bank is not until September this year. I think it's Labor Day weekend. That's as late as it's ever been. So we're not even close to that yet. I'm just thinking, you know, far down the road. I just think there's more storyline potential for Liv as the champion, you know, working with different people. So I'm going with Liv to win the title. We have AJ Lee defending the Women's Intercontinental Championship against Becky Lynch. This is AJ Lee's first WrestleMania match since 2015, and she has gotten a whole bunch of wins over Becky Lynch. One singles win at Elimination Chamber, which is where she won the belt, but also, you know, there was the mixed tag match at WrestlePalooza when AJ came back last year. There was the War Games match. They were on opposing teams. So Becky is just, she's got a big offer right now when it comes to her matches with AJ Lee. I think she corrects that on Saturday. I think Becky wins back the Intercontinental Championship. I think that's the right move to make, you know, especially if we're not going to be seeing AJ Lee all too frequently on TV. And maybe we shouldn't, but if that's the case, then I don't really see the need to keep this belt on her and prolong this. You know, it was kind of like a nice token title win for her, a nice fun moment in Chicago back at the Chamber. But now, you know, we're kind of, reality is setting in. And either AJ is going to be around or she's not. She's going to be around, then that's fine. But I still think Becky is walking out with that championship. We have Seth Rollins, Mr. Becky Lynch, going one-on-one with the Ring General, Gunther. This is the match that Cody Rhodes told ESPN this morning that he is most excited for as a viewer. Now, how did we get here? Well, we got here because a whole lot of things have gone down over the last few months that wreaked havoc on this WrestleMania card. including an injury to Seth Rollins, where we didn't know for sure if he was even going to be back in time to be on the WrestleMania card. It really all goes back to Crown Jewel in Saudi back in October. Or was it Saudi? No, it wasn't Saudi. It was Perth. But that was back in October, and he had that match with Cody Rhodes. He did that coast to coast. Cody was in one corner. Seth came in with a diving headbutt, which was very stupid, and the way he landed, he fucked up his shoulder. So he missed many months, and he came back, and the belief was that they were going to try to set something up with him and Bron Breakker, because Bron Breakker is the one who, you know, kicked him out of his own group. He kicked him out of the Vision. Then Bron Breakker got hurt, and he needed emergency hernia surgery a couple months ago. It's like the walking wounded. Then Bronson Reed got hurt. And we're not going to see him for many months. He had the torn bicep. So a lot of bad luck has befallen the Vision in the last few months. And then on Gunther's side, you have this guy who has been booked so dominantly. They gave him credit for being the man to retire Bill Goldberg. And they gave him credit for being the man to retire John Cena. And they gave him credit for being the man to retire AJ Styles at the Royal Rumble. And it's like, boy, they must have something really big planned for this guy for WrestleMania. And he wrestled on like March 3rd. He had a match on TV. And we didn't see him for almost the full 4 weeks. He just vanished. In the most critical period on the road to WrestleMania where you are building this card, he disappeared. And it looked like maybe they don't have any ideas for him. Maybe they'll just do an open challenge with him. But how do you have someone who has been so important on this roster and not have something, you know, clear direction for this man heading into your biggest show of the year? Well, I mean, there were a lot of moving parts. Rey Mysterio got hurt. There were reports that he was going to be the one to work with Gunther, but he had two broken ribs and they didn't know when he was going to be cleared. So here we are. We end up with two men who needed a match at WrestleMania. Bron Breakker, by the way, is supposedly cleared, but they don't want to rush him back. So it's not a case of, well, he couldn't wrestle Seth because he's still hurt. Apparently he's cleared, but they just didn't want to rush into the match on short notice. So this is what we ended up with. And last night on Raw, the final Raw, the go-home Raw before WrestleMania, I at least give them credit for trying to give us some sort of explanation. Seth Rollins wanted to know why. Tell me why. Why is this personal to you? Gunther has said this is personal. Remember he had that little interaction with Paul Heyman last week? And he said that basically, in so many words, Heyman is going to owe him something much bigger down the road, which I think is going to be a SummerSlam match with Brock Lesnar. But Seth wanted an explanation, so Gunther gave him one. He said, you want to know why it's personal to me? Because I don't like you. You go around, you prance around, talking about how you're the best. You're the best wrestler, you're the best performer in WWE. I am the best in-ring wrestler in WWE. And he's going to prove that at WrestleMania. Very, very basic explanation, right? Doesn't get any more simple than that. You think you're the best wrestler? I know I'm the best wrestler. So these two men are going to go out there and have a great wrestling match to find out who the better man is. Now, it's stretching things to say, well, this is personal. It's not really personal. But they have to try to frame it that way. But this may be the sleeper show of the entire weekend. Two of the best in-ring performers in the entire company are about to go out there on a stage where you know they're going to want to show up and give their best. And so I expect nothing short of an excellent match between these two. I also expect that we're going to see Bron Breakker show up and cost Seth Rollins a win. So that way that reignites the issue between them coming out of WrestleMania. You can build to Seth Rollins against Bron Breakker. And Gunther gets another win. Right? He notches another feather in his cap on the road to the eventual match with Brock Lesnar. We have a fatal four-way for the women's tag team titles. Nia Jax and Lash Legend defend their titles against Charlotte Flair and Alexa Bliss, Bayley and Lyra Valkyria, and possibly, maybe, the Bella Twins. Because we still have no update on the condition of Nikki Bella's ankle. She suffered an ankle injury. It might have been a high sprain or a bad sprain a couple weeks ago. And she's 50-50 right now. There's been no update on her condition. There was really nothing even said about the Bellas on Raw last night. We saw some of the participants in this match. Nia and Lash weren't there. But there was some back and forth with Charlotte and Alexa, Bayley and Lyra. Charlotte lost to Lyra Valkyria last night on Raw. But no mention of the Bella Twins other than when they ran down the preview for the show. They weren't there. It's coming down to the 11th hour here, and there's been some talk that maybe if the Bellas can't go, they might substitute another team in there like Asuka and Kairi Sane, which could potentially be why we are not getting Io Sky against Asuka on the WrestleMania card this year, which is a sin. But whatever the case may be, it's going to be a little bit before we find out whether or not the Bellas are in there. I'm indifferent towards it. I don't really care. I mean, I hope Nikki Bella heals up and everything. I've, you know, nothing against her personally, but just in terms of this match here, you know, everything they have done to really build this match up has just, I've just been totally nonplussed about this. You got some really talented women who are a part of this match. Charlotte and Bayley and Lyra and Alexa. I mean, there's a lot of really talented women and women that have had some really good matches in the past, whether it's singles or tag matches, but everything they have done, it's been very paint by numbers. It's been very, I don't know, just heatless. There's not a lot of excitement that's really driving this issue between these teams. And we've gotten some horrendous match finishes as well, you know, between them over the last several weeks. These two teams wrestle, somebody interferes. These two teams, I mean, you know, that sort of thing. I had Bayley and Lyra as my pick to win the belts. And then I saw Lyra beat Charlotte on TV last night, and I feel a little less confident in my prediction, but I'm going to stick with it. I'm going to stick with Bayley and Lyra to win the women's tag team titles at WrestleMania. I may not be as confident as I was, you know, 24 hours ago, but I'm going to stick with it. And then in the main event, we have Cody Rhodes defending the WWE Championship against, I think, Randy Orton. It could be Pat McAfee. Pat McAfee's in the graphic. He'll be there. He'll be in Randy Orton's corner for sure. Man, I look at this, I look at that graphic, and I just say to myself, man, what could have been? 20 years of history between these two men, going back to when Cody first started out, you know, when Cody first came to Monday Night Raw, or came to, I guess that's where Legacy was, they were on Monday Night Raw. Him and Randy Orton and Ted DiBiase Jr., right? Cody was just getting his start under the learning tree with Randy Orton. A lot of history there between them. And it's been many years since Randy Orton has held a world championship. And the mission is clear. He wants to win number 15. Again, a very simple story. Not unlike John Cena last year, but they didn't put as much of an emphasis on him wanting to win number 17. Feeling like, I've got to do this. I've got to win number 17. They botched that story up something fierce. It's a very similar story here, though. Randy Orton wants to win number 15. It's why a lot of the fans have been cheering him. He's that elder statesman. They don't want to boo the guy, and they really want to see him win number 15. It was always going to be an uphill climb no matter what when it came to fan reaction going into WrestleMania. And even with everything that they have done, I'm still expecting more of a mixed reaction that probably favors Randy over Cody going into Mania. Maybe the McAfee stuff will help shift things a little bit in the other direction. But the focus of the match has just shifted so dramatically from what this could have and should have been that we have a match here. And I don't know if you all feel the same way about this, but I'll speak for myself on this. This is a match I've been waiting a long time to see. And I'm not talking about a one-off like they had last year at the King of the Ring. I mean a proper feud, a proper program between these two men. And now we have it in the main event of WrestleMania, a match that I've been waiting for. And now my attitude about this is I just can't wait to get this over with. I can't. I can't get excited for it in the way that I thought I would be able to. Because the focus has just been shifted so dramatically in a different, more terrible way that I almost can't believe they have found a way to screw all of this up. Now, McAfee also announced that if Randy Orton does not win the championship, we will never see or hear from him again in this business. Which is very hard to believe, and there's already, you know, rumors out there about a tag team match coming at Backlash May 9th. Cody Rhodes and Jelly Roll against Randy Orton and Pat McAfee. We'll see if that actually happens. I mean, the way things have been going lately, you would think Cody and Punk would make more sense against Orton and McAfee. But Jelly Roll was there. I didn't even mention that when I talked about that terrible segment on Friday. I didn't even get into the Jelly Roll aspect, where Jelly Roll was laid out by Randy Orton off camera, and then he stumbled to the ring to try to come and save the day for Cody, and then he had Pat McAfee in a chokehold, and I'm watching this, and I'm just like, I'm just shaking my head watching this all play out. Now, Jelly Roll is not in the graphic, I would expect that he will factor into this match in some way. Perhaps a situation where he's not there initially, but then he comes out to try to neutralize Pat McAfee when McAfee tries to get involved. I'm expecting this to be an overbooked mess. Like, there'll be a ref bump. Pat McAfee's going to get involved. Jelly Roll's going to come out to try to fight him off, which is the best thing I think that we could hope for, because if he fights off with McAfee, we can get a proper match between Cody and Randy. When all is said and done, I think they're going to pull a title change here. I think that if they have some great idea in mind for this story, then I think it really only works if Randy is successful and wins the championship. I mean, if he goes in there at WrestleMania and just gets beat, it would seem to really extinguish, you know, whatever it is that they're going for here. And I think they want to end the show on night one with some sort of, I don't know if cliffhanger is the right word, but I think they're going to want to do something big like they did last year. Remember night one last year? We had a big triple threat match, Roman, Punk, Rollins. And we had the big swerve with Paul Heyman aligning with Seth Rollins. That was the big shocker to end night one. Yeah, I think they're going to want to do something similar this year. And I think Randy Orton is going to win number 15. And beyond that, where this story may or may not go, I mean, it could go any number of ways. It could get better. It could get worse. Believe it or not, it could always get worse. But I do think at the end of all this, we're going to have a new champion. So that's seven matches. And then it is WrestleMania Sunday with the first hour simulcasting live on ESPN. Opening the show, and this is the right move, Brock Lesnar against Obafemi. This is the match I am most looking forward to. Out of all of the matches at WrestleMania, we're going to end up probably with about 13, maybe 14, probably 13 matches total. This is the one. They have not had a single misstep in this entire process. Now, both men were on the show last night. They signed their contracts separately. First, it was Brock at the beginning of the show, and then he was gone. He was on the jet. He was already home before the show had even reached the probably the midway point. And then later on, Obafemi came out to sign the contract. And this was a big night for Oba, because this was the first time that he had the chance to have a live mic in his hand. And he's on the main roster now, right? He's cut promos in NXT before when he was the champion. But this is his first opportunity to go out there in a big spot like this and talk and address the audience and address WrestleMania. And I thought he knocked it out of the park, right? He didn't look nervous. He didn't sound, you know, like he was unsure of himself or he was overly rehearsed. I mean, you could tell, like, listening to some of the verbiage in the promo, like, there was some stuff that was written for him that maybe he normally himself wouldn't say, but I thought he handled it very well. He was cutting a promo, you know, on Paul Heyman, who would come out to address him from the stage. And then his intensity grew as the promo went on, and he had the crowd in the palm of his hand. And that's the thing that I've noticed, is that no matter where they have been on this road to WrestleMania, from the moment he came out and confronted Brock and laid him out that first time, every city they're in, from New York to Texas to California, these people have been behind Obafemi 100%. There's no ambiguity here. It's not like, oh, it's 70-30. No. And it won't be that way at WrestleMania either. They're chanting his name. They're barking. They're strutting with him when he comes down the aisle. They've already made a star. Now, all you need to do is stick the landing. This is the easiest thing in the world. They've done everything right in this process up to now. And I think the only way they could fuck it up is by having Brock beat him. Now, Brock beating him is not a death sentence. You get beat by Brock Lesnar, especially if it's a competitive match. It's not like a death sentence or anything, but I just think it would be a huge misfire if they don't stick the landing and have him win this match. Because you can have him go out there and talk about how I'm the here and now, I'm the one. 25 years, you've coasted, you've beaten all these people, but you've never been in the ring with anybody like me before. I'm different. Like, this guy, he's special. Yeah, well, the best way to prove that is by having him go in there and beat the other guy. Because at the end of the day, I still believe as a fan that wrestling, wins and losses still matter. They still mean something. And I've had this debate with people. People have sent in questions to the show, and like, I've heard people, I've heard even like wrestlers and people say, like, do wins and losses matter? Some say they do, some say they don't. They absolutely 100% do. I don't care what anybody says. Because at the end of the day, if you were trying to build credibility and establish someone's credibility, the easiest way to get them over is by having them go out there and win consistently. It's very simple. That's all they need to do here. I'm not sure if they will. Obe has been very dominant so far. We have yet to see him really struggle. We have yet to see him take a bump in all of the interactions that he and Brock have had. I mean, I guess he kind of did. He got thrown into the ring post, I think, last week. But I mean, like, he hasn't been laid out by Brock the way that, you know, Brock was laid out by him. And normally I would look at that and go, uh-oh, they're building, they're keeping him strong now to kind of soften the blow when Brock beats him at WrestleMania. Absolutely could very well happen. Maybe they don't want Brock losing at all until we get to Minneapolis at SummerSlam. I think Obafemi wins this match. I think he will win this match. I think he should win this match. It is the right move to make. And then you strap the rocket to this guy and you launch him into the stratosphere. I'm not saying put the world title on him right away, but you strap that rocket to him because you have made a new main event player in this company. And that is the best way to use Brock Lesnar, is to get somebody over like him who's going to be money for you going forward. You want to keep Brock strong? This is what you keep Brock strong for. It's for moments like this to help get this guy to that next level. And I think that's what they're going to do. The other match airing in the first hour on ESPN, which I think is also smart because, you know, this is going to be all action if you're trying to, you know, hook in a casual audience. We have Penta defending his Intercontinental Championship in a six-way ladder match against Dragon Lee, Javon Evans, JD McDonagh, Rusev, who laid everybody out on Raw last night, and the Hall of Famer, Rey Mysterio. I don't want to see Penta lose this championship. Penta has not been champion for very long. He's super over. I don't see the need to take the title off of him just because it's WrestleMania. You know, Javon Evans, his time will come. He's still very young. Plenty of time to put the title on him at some point. Rey Mysterio, what the hell does he need it for? Rusev's not winning anything. I mean, this guy could buy 1,000 scratch-off tickets. He's not winning a damn thing. JD McDonagh, same thing. Dragon Lee, I could see Dragon Lee getting a moment, but I think the right move to make, and I think that the one that they will make, is Penta retaining the title. Then we get into the rest of this card here. We have Finn Balor going one-on-one with Dominic Mysterio. They've already told you that it's not just going to be Finn Balor, it's going to be the Demon. We have Demon Balor. Finn Balor, when he puts the demon paint on his body, it's been quite some time since we've seen the Demon emerge. The Demon has been a loser in each of the last two matches where Balor has put the paint on. Last time was at WrestleMania, a couple years ago. Actually, 3 years ago, I guess, now at this point. He lost a Hell in a Cell match to Edge, which was allegedly a Vince McMahon decision. And before that, the very embarrassing moment when he wrestled Roman Reigns, what was that, 5 years ago, I guess? And he fell off the top rope. Don't even ask. If you didn't see it, you have no idea what I'm talking about, don't even ask. To me, that was the night that the Demon died. But now I guess enough time has gone by. I don't know why you would have him bring the Demon character back and have him lose for a third straight time, so he's going to win this match. Then we have a match that maybe more than any other intrigues me the most, which is Sami Zayn defending the United States Championship against Trick Williams. And I just talked about Obafemi, and this guy's the future, and he's super over, and you gotta strap the rocket to him. Trick Williams is also super over with the crowds, even though he's supposed to be a heel. The people like Trick Williams, and his presentation is just on point. The music and the fur coat and everybody's singing along to his theme song when he comes out. The guy just, he knows how to carry himself like a star. And I have no issue with him being the one to challenge for the championship on this show. I feel bad that Carmelo Hayes is left out of the picture after all the work that he put in those U.S. title open challenges on SmackDown over the last several months. He's one of the best they got. It's been one of the best parts of the show. And then right before WrestleMania, he gets it taken away from him, and he's not even involved. He's not even on the card. He'll probably be in the Andre Battle Royal next week. And the sin there is that he was in the Andre Battle Royal last year. And I know he won it, but still, he should be doing more than that this year. But we have one-on-one with Sami and Trick. And I have, you know, many weeks ago, I started pushing this idea. And now a lot of people are talking about it, and there's a report that maybe WWE is considering it. But I was talking about this at least 2, maybe 3 weeks ago, where instead of Cody and Randy and the idea of a double turn, because they're not turning Cody Rhodes heel. People have to let that go. It's not happening right now. But a double turn here would actually make a hell of a lot of sense. Okay, and here's why. If you saw Sami Zayn come out on SmackDown on Friday night, he got booed out of that building. And I don't mean like light boos, like a smattering of boos. He was booed. These people do not like Sami Zayn, not as much as they used to. And it's not a surprise why. The guy comes out there, he's like a sad sack. How many weeks have gone by of Sami Zayn walking around all depressed and all dejected? Right? It's annoying. No one wants to cheer for that. Trick Williams comes out. He's projecting confidence and like he's so full of himself. He's the best. Look, I got my lemon pepper steppers and all this stuff. Who wouldn't want to cheer for somebody like that? So the reactions don't surprise me at all. But this is part of a longer story that they've been telling with Sammy that I think is ultimately leading to him just going full on heel. And the fans like Trick. And so it just makes sense that, okay, let's pull a double turn here at WrestleMania. They don't really have to do a whole lot to turn them, so to speak, but it only works if Sami Zayn retains the title here. Because to me, that's the best way to put more heat on him. You have him go in there and win. People are not going to want to see him win. They're going to want to see Trick win. They're going to want to see Trick anointed as the new U.S. champion. Sami's going to deprive them of that. And not only that, but he has to take a shortcut to do it. Because if he just beats him clean, that's the worst thing you could do. But if he goes in there and he takes advantage of a moment, right? There's something nefarious that he does. He cheats in some way because Sami is coming to the realization, all these things that he didn't want to do. He didn't want to lower himself to that level. But wait a minute, when he does, he actually has success. And now he's willing to do whatever it takes. He ain't going to lose this title. He just won this championship a couple of weeks ago. He doesn't want to lose it. He'll do whatever it takes to keep it. And that'll drive more people away from him. It will drive them further in the camp of Trick Williams. And I just think it makes so much sense. Just let it evolve naturally, but you kind of give people a nudge, right, in the direction that you want them to go in. Sami has to win this match for this story to work. I don't see the need to take the belt off him right now. I would make Trick have to really work for it and then pull the trigger in a few months. Really build this out as a long-term thing. It intrigues me because I don't know if that's what they're going to do, but I hope they do. So I'm going with Sami Zayn to retain the title here. We have Jade Cargill defending the WWE Women's Championship against Rhea Ripley. This is one of those matches where everything they've been doing on TV, I just really could not possibly care any less. I mean, the build up to this match, the anticipation for this match that I have is next to zero. And the question is Io Sky going to be involved here? She may as well be if she's not going to have a match. I mean, they literally have been calling her, what, Asuka called her Rhea's sidekick on the show last night. That cut deep because there was no lies in what she was saying. That's exactly how Io has been portrayed in all of this. She's been portrayed as Rhea's sidekick. And her only real involvement in this build to WrestleMania has been to further this terrible story between Rhea Ripley and Jade Cargill. But here's my wild idea, because I think Jade Cargill is retaining this title. I don't think Rhea Ripley is walking out as the champion. Here's my wild idea. We get a return of Bianca Belair. Bianca Belair has been gone for 1 year. We have not seen her since WrestleMania last year. She had that incredible opening match on night two, where it was her and Rhea Ripley and Io Sky for the Women's World title. Just a tremendous match. One of the better opening matches that you'll ever see. Unfortunately, she got hurt. There was a big, I think, Tower of Doom spot. And it was Rhea, I believe, who landed on Bianca's hand and crushed her knuckle and her fingers. And it was just a really bad injury that I don't think anybody realized how bad it was and that she would still be out 1 year later. But here we are. But I predict that she's going to show up at WrestleMania. And when everybody thinks that she's showing up to provide the assist to Rhea Ripley, she's going to take out Io Sky if Io is there at ringside, and she's going to cost Rhea Ripley the match. She is going to play a role in Jade Cargill retaining that WWE Women's Championship. And then coming out of WrestleMania, we're going to have Jade and Bianca still together on the same side. Now, why would this happen? For everything I just talked about. This woman has lost a year of her career that she can't get back. And the reason she lost it is because of that match that she had with Io Sky and Rhea Ripley, who have gone on without her. Life has gone on without Bianca Belair. She has been forgotten. This horrendous injury that she suffered, right? Maybe Rhea never picked up the phone and checked on her to see how she's doing, but it all goes back to that injury. And so she has every reason in the world to feel, you know, slighted and resentful. And she's going to take those two out. Because there never really was a falling out between Jade and Bianca. I mean, they were tag team champions at one point. And so I would keep the two of them together. It might be a tough sell, Bianca being gone for this long. People may not want to boo her, but what a swerve that would be. But you could actually make it make sense. And then, even better, you could build to the eventual match between Rhea Ripley and Bianca Belair. Now, to me, that's a WrestleMania match. I don't know that they would wait that long for it, but that's my prediction. That's my my bold prediction, because I haven't seen any updates on where Bianca is in the recovery process. She only had surgery, or her latest one, like a couple of months ago, right? Maybe 2.5 months ago. So it might be a little pie in the sky, but that's how I see it playing out. And then in the main event of night two, CM Punk gets his very first singles main event at WrestleMania, defending the World Heavyweight Championship against Roman Reigns. This is the first time ever that this version of the World Heavyweight title is being defended in the night two main event. We had one last confrontation between them on TV last night. I thought it was a very underwhelming promo. It was a much more subdued, reflective CM Punk, who actually apologized to Roman. He did exactly what Jey Uso wanted him to do all those weeks ago, but he couldn't bring himself to do it. He apologized to Roman for invoking his father's name all those weeks ago in one of their face-to-face segments. This, the same man who came out the week before and called this guy a buck-tooth Nepo baby who sucked at football and all of these, you know, other terrible things that he had to say to Roman when Roman wasn't there. Now Roman shows back up on the show last night, and all of a sudden Punk is striking a very different tone. I thought that was a little weird. But yeah, the thing I can say now that we've reached the end here of the build to this match is that they peaked at the beginning of February. They peaked with that very first confrontation they had coming out of the Royal Rumble. That segment, that initial segment, was still the best interaction that the two of them have had in the last 3 months. And they just have not had a whole lot new since then to say. Nothing that's been terribly interesting, especially Roman. It's like they've been struggling on some weeks to figure out, okay, how can we really heat this back up? And how can we throw more gas on the fire? I mean, we had a couple of pull-apart brawls, which is pretty basic stuff. But just in terms of the substance of like their promos and what they've been saying to each other, yeah, I mean, it makes sense. Roman says, "I hate you." And Punk says, "Well, I hate you too." But it just never quite reached the apex of that first week. Now, my fear as far as how this goes is that Pat McAfee is going to be involved in this as well, given the shots that he and Punk have traded over the past week, even on Raw last night. You know, one of the comments that Roman made, he brought up Pat McAfee and said that, "I like Pat, right? But no punter has ever made comments about me, right? The way that he did about CM Punk." And I can envision a scenario, and again, I'm putting my fantasy booking cap on here. I can envision a scenario where he and or Randy Orton show up on night two to help screw CM Punk out of the World Heavyweight title with the idea of there being some sort of new TKO-endorsed corporate faction to do battle, you know, into the summer against names like Cody Rhodes and CM Punk. I don't like the idea of Roman Reigns as world champion again. I don't like the idea of him as champion with the reduced schedule that he has. And good for him, man. I mean, that's the dream, right? To get paid all that money and have a reduced schedule, and he's got a bunch of kids at home. He gets to spend more time with his family. I think that's great. And I think there will always be a role for him on the show because he's obviously one of the biggest stars that this company has had in the last decade plus. But when he has a reduced schedule where he only appears so many times throughout the year, and we went through this the first time. You know, the first time we went through the Bloodline stuff, it was still kind of fresh when they were in the middle of it. You had Sami Uso, right, when Sami Zayn was a part of it. It was very entertaining, and they found ways through the other Bloodline members to try to keep things fresh and interesting when Roman wasn't there. But I know what that's like, where it's like the key guy is not there. Now you have to find all these ways to keep the weekly TVs interesting with him not around. And they're not very good at that sort of thing. Not lately, anyway. So I don't want to see him as world champion again for that reason, more than anything else. And maybe as far as the TKO stuff, maybe I'm overthinking this and it's as simple as a bloodline reunion, which would just feel like a retread of something that they did better the first time that we've already seen. That only works, though, if Roman wins. I don't think Roman is winning. I think CM Punk is going to retain the World Heavyweight title. So that's six matches as compared to seven on night one. They're already teasing some sort of interaction between Danhausen and John Cena, who's hosting the show. Plus, they usually introduce the Hall of Famers out on stage. That'll probably happen on night two. So between that and the half a billion commercials that they're going to inundate us with in between matches, I'm sure they'll find a way to fill the time. But night two is definitely the stronger of the two nights on paper, even without the extra match. But these shows are going to live or die based on the finishes of those two main events, because that's been taking up most of the oxygen, right? Is the build-up to Roman and Punk and the build-up to Cody and Randy, and now the infusion of this other person who really doesn't have anything to do with the story, and he's taking up all the oxygen in the room. What are they going to do? What role is McAfee going to play? These shows are going to live or die based on what the end of those matches looks like. AEW held its Dynasty pay-per-view from Vancouver, British Columbia on Sunday night. I thought it was a very good pay-per-view overall, with a crowd that was, for the most part, very responsive to what they saw. And it followed the same formula as most AEW pay-per-views do, where you get a ton of great pro wrestling. You get some matches in the middle that, you know, maybe aren't all that exciting. There's also a few matches that don't need to be on the show. And then when it's over, you're completely exhausted. Welcome to AEW. Not a lot in the way of really memorable moments, but there were a few surprise finishes, especially in the tag team title match with Cope and Christian losing. But the wrestling was largely rock solid. I mean, that's never anything you need to worry about with these shows. Kenny Omega and MJF, the tag team title match, the Young Bucks against Okada and Takeshita were all great. It was also a great night to be a heel in this company. But on the 0 hour pre-show, as Willow Nightingale was being interviewed backstage, she was jumped. She was attacked from behind by the returning Camille. Remember her? No, I don't blame you. It's been a while since we've seen this woman. And then Camille ended up having a squash match later on in the pre-show. Willow came out, her shoulder was all bandaged up. She was looking for revenge, but she got laid out again. And so now we know there's going to be a TBS title match. Willow is going to be defending that championship tomorrow night on the Spring Breakthrough episode of Dynamite against Camille. Camille was gone for 529 days. Last time we saw her, November of 2024. This was after she split away from Mercedes Moné, because they had introduced her as her heater, right, as her muscle. And they proceeded to do absolutely nothing with Mercedes and Camille. There was a story there to tell, where eventually Camille would split off, and maybe Camille would be primed to be the first person to beat Mercedes. I mean, there's any number of ways you could have gone with it. But it was very weird how after maybe 3 months, maybe, they just sort of ended the alliance, the relationship between the two of them. And then on just a random episode of whatever it was, Dynamite or Collision, we find out that Camille was laid out in the back. Not unlike how they wrote Toni Storm off television only a few weeks ago. She was attacked by a mystery assailant who was never identified. And that was it. We had not seen Camille since. We had not heard her name mentioned. Tony Khan would not answer questions about her status whenever he was asked about her. It was like a big mystery. Now, during her time off, she did promotional work for the Queen of the Ring movie that had come out. She had a role in that movie. She played June Byers. AEW would not even acknowledge that she was in the movie. They had Toni Storm was in the film. I remember when they had footage of the red carpet and they're showing Toni Storm, and it's like, How does that make Camille feel? Like, she's under contract to this company. She has a role, you know, a pretty important role too in that movie. But you would never know it if you watched AEW television. They just never acknowledged it. But it's no coincidence that she happens to return the same week that the new American Gladiators reboot premieres on Amazon Prime. She has a role on there. She's one of the gladiators named Hurricane. Actually, Wardlow is on that show as well, and he's currently out with an injury. And they did mention the American Gladiators show on commentary, so I'm sure that it was not a coincidence that they brought her back to TV this week. Alex Windsor picked up a win over Marina Shafir. You would have to go back to January to find a Marina Shafir win on AEW television, which is kind of surprising to me, given how protected John Moxley is, that they wouldn't feed her more wins. They're all part of the same faction. Jack Perry retained his national title over Mark Davis with a flash pin off of a Hurricanrana. I was kind of hoping that Mark Davis was going to be in the Casino Gauntlet later in the show, and then I heard that he was going to be wrestling Jack Perry on the pre-show, and I said, well, so much for that idea. Because he was kind of my wild card pick, where I would have loved to have seen him get a run with the TNT title. But once I saw this, I said, well, this is not going to be his night. And the Divine Dominion, Megan Bain and Lena Cross, they retained their tag team titles over Hyon and Maya World. And I love these two together. You know, Divine Dominion as a team, they've really gelled well. When they walk out to the ring, you got these two tall women walking down there, towering over everybody, just looking dominant. And, you know, I know Penelope Ford got hurt a few months ago. The team was Megan Bain and Penelope Ford. Penelope Ford got hurt. They had just introduced Lena Cross as like an ally of theirs. And it just worked out. It just worked out, you know, where, hey, we'll just sub Lena Cross in there in the Penelope Ford spot. But honestly, this team just works so much better with the two of them together. I don't know what that's going to mean for Penelope when she's ready to come back. It sucks for her, but these two together as a team are great. And as far as where this is going, I think it all goes to Wembley at the end of August. And I think it's the Brawling Birds, Jamie Hayter and Alex Windsor, winning the tag team titles off of these two in the UK. But for the second month in a row, the Young Bucks, they opened the main card of a pay-per-view. Last month of Revolution, it was a loss to FTR for the tag team titles. They fared better here against Kazuchika Okada and Konosuke Takeshita. And in both cases, they were excellent opening matches. My favorite part of this, though, was Okada. At one point, he put the Young Bucks headband on and their ring jacket just in the middle of the match. And he climbs up on the apron in the Bucks corner to like beg for the hot tag from Matt Jackson. And then he just has this big shit-eating grin on his face and he flips him off. Oh, it's great. Troll Kata. I love Troll Kata. But then things fell apart for the Callis family when Takeshita blasted Okada by accident with the power drive knee. And then when Okada recovered, he tried for a Rainmaker clothesline to Matt Jackson. He ducked and he hit Okada with it instead, although he didn't seem to be too devastated by it. And then for the finish, the Bucks had Okada set up for the Meltzer driver, and Takeshita had the chance to stop it, and then he chose not to. He backed away, and Okada falls to the Young Bucks. And Don Callis was beside himself. He had promised Takeshita coming into this, because Takeshita didn't want to have anything to do with teaming up with Okada. I mean, there has been bad blood brewing with these two now for many, many, many months. And Callis was like, look, basically, you do me this solid. You want a shot at Okada's international title, you agree to team up with him at Dynasty. And that's what he did. But then we saw what happened here at the end. So is Callis going to renege on their deal now or what? I don't know. But I'm hoping we get that match at Double or Nothing. Instead of having to wait until Wembley at the end of August, I think doing that match in New York City at the end of next month, that's the way to go. Chris Jericho. Or maybe I should start calling him Jericho. He's not using his first name anymore. What is it with these Canadian guys, you know, ditching their first names in their 50s? I don't really understand this. I mean, do we have to wait 10 years and then the Ariel Helwani show is just going to be Helwani? It's going to be the Helwani show? Is that what's going to happen here? Should I be prepared for this? This was Jericho's first match back in a year against Ricochet. And Jericho came back in Winnipeg a few weeks ago. He signed his contract last Wednesday in Edmonton, and then he returned to the ring here in Vancouver. So it's been a nice long stretch of Canadian provinces or cities here for Jericho to make his return in. And he got the best reaction yet here in Vancouver. The fans were into everything that he did. He was super over. We'll see if that continues once they come back to the States. But I'll tell you what, you know, for a 55-year-old guy who has not wrestled in a year, I thought he looked really good. You know, and Ricochet was a good first opponent back for him because Ricochet, nobody likes Ricochet. Ricochet is hated as a heel in the way that you would want him to be hated, but he's also a tremendous in-ring performer. So there are very few people on that roster, I think, who if you had a choice of who to pick, you know, Ricochet is going to be on that short list of like, okay, I want to have the best possible like in-ring match I could have. I haven't done this in 12 months. So yeah, I think we'll go with Ricochet in this scenario. And Jericho was out there, man. He was taking some bumps. He took a Death Valley driver on the edge of the ring. He hit the Hurricane Rana from the top rope. I could have done without all of the Gates of Agony interference. I thought there was way too much of it here, but they used it, I guess, as a way to protect Jericho in defeat because he did lose. He lost his first match back. Ricochet was going to pin him after a spirit gun. Toa Leona on the outside is like, no, not yet, not yet. So then he gave him a lion salt. Rub salt in the wound. And he pinned Jericho with his own lion salt. So that surprised me. I was expecting a Jericho win here. You're not going to see me complaining about Jericho putting other people over, though. I think that's fine. I'm sure it's part of a larger story that they're telling with him. But he is unsuccessful in his return. Now, at the Dynasty post-show scrum, Joel Pearl of Fightful asked Tony Khan about Ricochet's controversial reply on X several weeks ago where he told an old lady that he was glad she got MS. And nobody had asked Tony about it up to this point. He said, I did talk to Ricochet. I had a conversation with him. I had a good conversation and a frank talk that was not acceptable. And I think that was communicated. We have a policy and there continues to be a policy in place for such things and that violated it. There is no place for that in wrestling or anywhere. I don't think it should have taken this long to get that kind of response, but good on him for finally addressing it. And there should be a policy for stuff like that. It's embarrassing to him and it's embarrassing to his company. I was surprised the comment stayed up as long as it did. I don't know why they didn't act sooner. Darby Allin against Andrade El Idolo. Whether he wins or loses in his matches, Andrade, the second run that he has had here in AEW has been tremendous. I mean, the body of work that this guy has been able to put together, it's been a lot of fun to watch. But it was a Darby Allin match, so of course he took a lot of dumb bumps because it wouldn't be a Darby match if he didn't. He managed to use his Last Supper finish for the flash pin to win it. And Andrade played it like he was shocked, but he actually shook hands with Darby when the match was over. So between that and just how hesitant he was to even accept this match in the first place, you know, Don Callis, he accepted money from the AEW World Champion, from MJF, to try to take out Darby Allin. And Callis decided Andrade is going to be the guy to do the job. And he looked like, you know, when he made that announcement a few weeks ago, Andrade had this look like he didn't even want the spot. But when this match was over, he shook the man's hand. So it feels like we're headed for an Andrade turn soon. And then Darby in Seattle tomorrow night, he called his shot later in the show for a world championship match, either with Kenny Omega or MJF. I'll talk more about that later. Adam Copeland and Christian Cage against FTR for the AEW tag team titles. They had a very good match with a genuinely surprising finish. Cope and Christian in Canada, very tempting to put the tag team titles on them here, especially after what Dax and Cash did to Copeland's wife, Beth, all those many months ago, dropped her on her head. But Tony resisted the urge. There was a spot where Copeland got whacked in the head with one of the tag belts and he came up bleeding. I mean, he was bleeding a gusher. Christian got taken out on the floor. That left Copeland all alone to fend for himself. He did manage a double spear. But then Cash Wheeler avoided another spear. Copeland ate a shatter machine for, I won't say a clean win per se, because Stokely Hathaway did get involved multiple times in this match, but it kind of was clean there at the end. Right in the middle of the ring, Copeland gets pinned and FTR retains the titles. I was surprised. Not shocked, but I was surprised. Because FTR did lose the first match last year, so you know the idea may be, okay, these two teams now, they're tied up, right? One win apiece, and so we get the rubber match soon. Or it could be to book a showdown with Cope and Christian against the Young Bucks, who won their match on this show, right? To see who gets the next shot at FTR. All roads, I think, lead to a three-way with all three teams involved. That's where I think this is ultimately headed. But there's not a doubt in my mind that Tony Khan wants Cope and Christian to hold those tag belts in his company at least one time. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. Canada would have been a great place for it, but that was a really good match. We had the Casino Gauntlet for the vacant TNT Championship. Kyle Fletcher, unfortunately, is injured. I think I talked about this last week, and he was in the hospital. He underwent surgery. They haven't said exactly what the injury is, if it's an ACL tear. Apparently, it's multiple injuries. We do know based on what Fightful said last week that there's a meniscus injury involved, but they said there were additional injuries, which was very ominous. We just don't know the full scope of those injuries, but he's going to be gone for a very long time. So he was stripped of the TNT title. He was still very early in his second run with the belt. Fightful also says that the original plan for this show before Kyle got hurt was for Fletcher, not Okada, to be teaming with Takeshita against the Young Bucks. And then I guess Okada would have been defending his international title against somebody else. But you know what they say, injury presents opportunity. And when I ran through my final predictions on my Sunday show, we only knew two names in advance that were in this gauntlet match. We knew Tommaso Ciampa was entering at number one, and we knew that Roosh was entering at number two. And that's it. That's all we knew. And the way these gauntlets work, they keep going until the first fall. So you can have two people in the gauntlet, you could have 20 people in the gauntlet. That's how it works. But I picked Kevin Knight to win the gauntlet and to win the title. So we had Ciampa, we had Roosh, we had Bandido in there, Speedball Mike Bailey, El Clone from the Don Callis family, Pac, Daniel Garcia, Anthony Bowens, Kevin Knight entered at number nine. I'm like, there's my guy. And Wheeler Yuta entered at number 10. So they kept it to 10 men. It did not overstay its welcome. For the finish, Garcia had sank in a dragon tamer, right? Sharpshooter. On Bailey, who looked like he was about to submit, when his tag team partner, Kevin Knight, flew in with a UFO splash, and he landed on both men, and he pinned Daniel Garcia to win the TNT title. Man, I look like a genius with that pick. But it made sense. Look at all the attention that Tony Khan has put on Kevin Knight over the last few months. Really, he had a breakout performance in the Continental Classic back in December. He had some really quality outings. He got some wins over some big names. And it just kind of bled over into the beginning of 2026, where he was getting a lot of screen time, you know, on Dynamite. So you could tell that they see a big future for him. And I just thought to myself, you know, I know they had the belt on Fletcher. Fletcher was a heel. Maybe they want to put it on another heel. But man, this would be a great spot to put that belt on Kevin Knight and give him a run with the championships. I was very happy to see him pick up the win here. Mike Bailey looked disappointed when it was over. So I think there'll be a match incoming very soon between the two partners for that belt. We had Tekla defending the AEW Women's World title against the former champion Jamie Hayter. And this is where I started to fade a little bit. As always happens with these AEW pay-per-views, they throw so much at you. There always comes that point in the show. And this was it for me. But these women, they beat the hell out of each other. A very hard-hitting match here. I mean, it's Jamie Hayter. Hayter hits hard. With a very flat finish that saw Tekla grab onto the bottom rope for a win. So they're now one win apiece because Hayter had beaten her last year at WrestleDream. That plus the way they did the finish, those things would lead you to believe that they're going to run this back again. I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure about that. It never felt like her title was in any real jeopardy. Again, the Brawling Birds, I think, are going to Wembley at the end of the summer to win the tag team titles. Jamie Hayter is not winning the world championship anytime soon. So it never felt like there was any real drama as far as how the match was going to go. But the match itself, I thought, was very solid. It just, again, I'm like, man, this is where it really started to hit me. Like, okay, we still have a whole bunch of matches left in this show. It's getting pretty late here. We had Jon Moxley after this defending the Continental Championship against Will Ospreay. And Will Ospreay wanted this to be a title match because under Continental title rules, everyone is banned from ringside. So that would mean no Death Riders. Ospreay would have Moxley all to himself. And right at the opening bell, he wiped out Moxley with a hidden blade. He could have gone for the win right then and there, but he wanted to toy with him. And he said, oh, I got plenty of time left because they have a 20-minute time limit for this match. And as it turned out, that proved to be his downfall. That was the undoing of Will Ospreay. Moxley ended up targeting the surgically repaired neck for a good chunk of this match. I mean, there were tons of near falls. It's an epidemic on these shows how many fucking near falls we have in every single match. It doesn't matter if it's the main event. It doesn't matter if it's the opening match. I mean, it's every single match on these shows from start to finish. It doesn't matter where you are, your position on the card or in the pecking order. They'll just hit these big moves and big finishers, and they'll just kick out of everything. You just get fatigued by it after a while. It's epidemic. But it was very noticeable here with the constant just kicking out of crazy moves. Moxley at one point gave Ospreay a pile driver on top of the ring steps. And the doctor rushed over to check on Ospreay. Moxley was going to take the count out. So, of course, Ospreay dove back into the ring before the 10 count. But he rolled right into a curb stomp and then two paradigm shifts. And Ospreay still kicked out. And then with 2 minutes left in the match, Moxley hit a death rider and he retained the title. I lost count with how many hidden blades Ospreay threw in this match. And Excalibur on commentary, he tried to explain that, you know, him doing that, he did so much damage to his arm, throwing all of those hidden blades, that he screwed himself out of a win. So that's the story that they're going with. And where does Ospreay now go from here? I mean, you're going to have to do a rematch between these two. I would save the rematch for the finals of the Owen Hart Foundation Tournament. So that way, Ospreay can finally get that elusive win that he hasn't been able to get over Jon Moxley. But instead of it being for a title that he doesn't need, he cements himself with a win in the finals as the number one contender for the world title. I like that idea a lot better. I hope they go with it. I know that it may be a couple of months yet before we even get to the Owen, because the winner of the Owen Hart tournaments, the way they've done it the last couple of years, gets a world championship match at All In. One for the men, one for the women. And last year, All In was in Texas, and they did it in mid-July. So the Owen started, when did the Owen start? I guess the Owen would have started in May, right? I think they had the finals at Double or Nothing, if I remember. But now All In is pushed back by like a month and a half. So I don't know when the Owen is going to start. I still think that that's a big enough match that you do that match in the finals. I think that would work out very nicely. We have the Dogs. David Finlay, Gabe Kidd, and Clark Connors. They won the AEW Trios titles the night before this on Collision from Mystico, Speedball Mike Bailey, and Kevin Knight. I love how Kevin Knight, he lost one championship and he picked up another one. But the Dogs have been a dud so far. I'm sorry. I mean, David Finlay, all three of these guys, very talented. David Finlay was, a fairly big free agent name. We knew he was most likely leaving New Japan. So who would grab him, right? Would he go to WWE or would he go to AEW? It's like the David Finlay sweepstakes. And so he chose AEW. He joined weeks ago, right? He hasn't been there for very long. And just look at the run that they have been on so far. I can't even remember. Prior to this past week, I think on Dynamite, we actually heard him speak words on the actual show. We hadn't even gotten a David Finlay promo yet. Not on Dynamite. Not since he joined the company. How is that possible? So this entire run for these three, since they reunited together here in AEW, has been a complete dud. So they put the belts on them. And then 24 hours later, and I guess technically it was 4 days because they taped this last Wednesday, but it aired 24 hours before. So we'll say 24 hours. 24 hours later, they had their first defense against the conglomeration. Orange Cassidy, Roderick Strong, and a mystery partner who ended up being Kyle O'Reilly. Kyle O'Reilly has missed a lot of time. He had a bulging disc in his neck. We haven't seen him in a while. Unfortunately, Gabe Kidd got taken out of the match right away on a dive that he took where it looked like he got hurt, possibly a shoulder injury. Turns out he may have dislocated his shoulder. Tony Khan has said that he is now out indefinitely. I'm pretty sure it was a shoulder dislocation because Kidd posted a video talking about how his shoulder popped out. So that was the injury, and we don't know when he's going to be back, but this turned into a handicap match. Like within the first, 90 seconds maybe of this match. A match that the conglomeration won. Kyle O'Reilly tapped out Clark Connors with an ankle lock to win the championships for his team. Evidently, this was always the plan. It was not changed on the fly because Kidd got hurt. I'm not sure that doesn't make it worse that they actually put the belts on these guys just to take them away from them 24 hours later. Why? Because they wanted heels in there to lose the belts to another set of baby faces. I know Kyle really wanted a return on this show. He grew up around those parts there in Vancouver. But I mean, this was a collision match that was not needed on this show. It's a nice moment for Kyle, but I'm watching this show and I'm like, can we please get to the main event already? This is ridiculous. But again, the booking of the dogs so far, just completely head-scratching to me. They've also been playing hot potato with those trios belts. They've already changed 5 times since the beginning of this year. It's only April. 5 times those titles have changed hands. The main event was Kenny Omega challenging MJF for the AEW World Championship. This match went to the ring at 11:38 p.m. Eastern Time after the pre-show matches started at 7. My issue with this is the same as it was with the Texas Death Match last month with MJF and Hangman. I didn't think that this, you know, that one I didn't think needed to go 45 minutes, and I didn't think this one needed to go 40 minutes. You know, it just gets to a point where it feels tedious. With so many near falls, you know, prolonging the match for an extra 10, 12 minutes. You can tell the same story that they told here, but just tighten things up a little bit, and I promise you, we'll not make the match any worse. You know, that being said, they had a very good match, and those fans wanted Kenny Omega to win the world title. They were very disappointed when he didn't. Now, of course, MJF went after the stomach, and we got a few diverticulitis mentions on commentary. Drink! Do a drinking game here. You're going to pass out from alcohol poisoning. So we got a bunch of mentions on commentary. These are mandatory for every Kenny Omega match. But really, that was the story for this one coming into it. They turned that into a story where MJF was like, oh, I talked to your doctor, and your doctor says that your stomach could explode at any moment, and your fucking insides could fall out all over the place. So Omega managed an avalanche one-winged angel at one point. MJF rolled out to the floor. So that was not the finish. Then, later on, MJF hit the Cody Rhodes crossroads spot into a package pile driver, and that was only good for a near fall. I mean, it's just whatever. We got a referee bump. MJF, he fished the Dynamite Diamond ring out of Bryce Remsburg's pocket because the referee had taken it away from him at the very beginning of the match. Omega, though, got a one-winged angel, but there was no referee, so he only got the visual pin. And they ended up on the apron. MJF caught him with a shot to the midsection. Shockingly, his stomach did not explode. His guts didn't fall out all over the place. MJF did deliver a tombstone off the apron through a table and then quickly rushed him back into the ring, hit a heat seeker, and he won the match to retain the title. The match ended at 12:17 a.m., which is typical for an AEW pay-per-view. And the balls on Tony Khan to beat Kenny Omega, Adam Copeland, Christian Cage, and Chris Jericho, all in Canada. And he beat Will Ospreay, too. So it was a good night if you were a heel in this company. MJF, Moxley, Tekla, FTR, they all retained their titles. I was happy to see MJF retain. That is the right decision. I didn't feel like it was the right time to take it away from him, but that could still happen tomorrow night because now we know it will be Darby Allin challenging MJF for the AEW World Championship on the Spring Breakthrough episode of Dynamite, which just so happens to be in Darby's backyard. And it has me thinking they're going to put that world title on Darby Allin tomorrow night. Otherwise, I'm not sure why they would blow through this match in Seattle. And not just wait until Double or Nothing, but then again, I could see them maybe doing some sort of dusty finish or disputed finish, and then it leads to a second match between them at the pay-per-view next month. I just feel like I can't shake this feeling that the play here is to give Darby his moment in his, basically his hometown, just to have MJF win it back from him in the rematch in New York, which is MJF's town at Double or Nothing. And if that happens, I think Darby does it either with a side headlock takeover or he counters out of one by MJF and a flash pin to win the title. That's how Darby wins most of his matches. He wins it like with a flash pin out of nowhere. That's how he wins like 90% plus, I feel like, of his matches anyway. That's how I see it going down. There's history there between the two of them. Their first match at Full Gear was in 2021. One of the best opening matches to a pay-per-view that they've ever had. And MJF, he blasted him. Referee didn't see it. He blasted him in the face with the Dynamite Diamond ring. Think about that. He's been doing that shit for fucking 6 years now. And then he grabbed Darby and he took him over in a headlock takeover, a side headlock takeover, and pinned him. And then there was a four-way match at Double or Nothing. Remember 3 years ago, the four pillars of AEW. Right, MJF, Darby Allin, Sammy Guevara, Jungle Jack Perry. And what happened there? He pinned Darby to retain the title with a side headlock takeover. So I can just see it now. That's going to be the finish. Only this time Darby beats MJF. I don't like it. Darby has never felt colder to me than he does right now. I think that you can absolutely try to, you know, build him up to a point where people are like, you know, they're dying to see him finally win the championship, right? The ultimate underdog here in AEW. But it just feels like this is being thrust upon us at a time when, like I said, Darby just has never felt colder than he does right now. But I also never envisioned Darby Allin having a long run with the belt when he eventually wins it. So him winning it in mid-April and then having a month and a half and dropping it back in late May, that sounds about right to me. I think part of it also is that they may be looking to steal some thunder away from WrestleMania this week, you know, by doing a big world title change on TV. I mean, it's not really going to do that, maybe for a day. But I have a feeling that might be part of their calculus here. But I think there's a very good chance we're getting a world title change on TV tomorrow. So a very good pay-per-view overall. It followed the same formula that most of these shows do. But on the whole, you got a lot of great pro wrestling. And I know their audience is always hungry for, you know, more, more, more. You can't have too much of a good thing. I say it all the time. You get a little bit less on those shows. I don't think people would really complain too much, but it was a very good show. Now, also on Dynamite tomorrow night, Willow defends her TBS title against Camille, and Kevin Knight will have his first defense of the TNT Championship against Claudio Castagnoli. So that's going to be a damn good match. Now, I have a update here to a story that I talked about a few weeks ago here on Uncrowned. There is a venue, a legendary venue that hosted a lot of independent wrestling in the Chicago area that will no longer be doing so. I covered this on Uncrowned episode 8, and we have some updates here. This comes per PW Insider earlier this week. Game Changer Wrestling announced on Thursday that all future live events at the Berwyn Eagles Hall in Illinois, a venue that has hosted endless independent events for decades, are canceled. The cancellation of all pro wrestling in the venue is the fallout of the incident several weeks ago when a fan got physically involved with Cruel during a deathmatch show promoted by Ruthless Pro Wrestling. There were claims coming out of the show that Cruel was in some way stabbed by the fan following the show, and video footage of numerous wrestlers beating the fan up in the venue made the rounds on social media. Brett Lauderdale, in announcing GCW's cancellation from the venue, said this: "We have just been informed by the venue that all events at the Berwyn Eagles Club, including our June 20th event, will have to be canceled. This was directly caused by an incident, the fake stabbing," he says, "that took place at another promotion's event, which has caused the town, lawyers, and police to be involved. It's truly a shame to see the Berwyn Eagles Club and 20-plus years of Chicago wrestling come to an end like this." Lauderdale also tweeted in response to another comment asking about the Cruel situation being a stunt. He said it wasn't a stunt. It was a lie made up by the locker room and the promoters to justify a gang beatdown. And now we have further word here from John Pollock of Post Wrestling with a more definitive update on what the hell happened here. The Berwyn Police Department confirms that no stabbing occurred at the Ruthless Pro Wrestling event last month in Illinois. An incident report was released to Post Wrestling after seeking records of the investigation by filing a Freedom of Information request. The Criminal Investigations Unit of the Berwyn Police Department investigated the March 28th incident at the Berwyn Eagles Club during an RPW show, the day after it was reported that a stabbing occurred, with an allegation that a fan attacked and stabbed wrestler Cruel, who also goes by the name Mads Kruger. The first video saw wrestlers and fans attacking the fan and removing him from the building. Subsequent clips revealed the fan approaching Krul in his merchandise table after the show, and Krul throwing the first punches before the fan was swarmed. The video did not show any sign of a weapon. Wrestlers Mickey Knuckles and Lou Nixon told Cultaholic that the stabbing occurred, but an anonymous source in the same story denied the stabbing. Since then, wrestler Gregory Iron also shared his firsthand account, and he did not see a stabbing, nor did anyone mention that after the fan was ejected. Detective William Masucci of the Berwyn PD was tasked with the investigation after being alerted to the Cultaholic article. Masucci contacted a person referred to as the manager of Ruthless Pro Wrestling, whose name is redacted. The March 28th event was the last show under previous manager Chris Kohlenberg, as the promotion is now being run by Ricky Shane Page and a couple of other people. The unnamed manager stated that the fan was causing problems early in the night and was intoxicated and warned by management to calm down or he would be removed. The fan agreed to calm down but approached Krul after the show and started causing more issues. The manager states that the fan ended up attacking his wrestler and tackled him to the ground. The fan continued to punch the wrestler several times. Then the rest of the wrestlers slash employees came in to help and got the fan off of him and escorted him out of the building. This account differs from one video clip where it shows Krul throwing the first punches, followed by the fan tackling him by another set of tables across the hall. The manager states that Redacted, presumably Krul, was not stabbed. The manager said he observed two or three police officers there and assumed that he did not need to call 911. The wrestler was contacted at the airport on his way home and told the detective that some guy was causing problems all night and came up to him at the end of the night and struck him several times and tackled him to the ground. His peers then got the fan off of him and took matters into their own hands. The Berwyn Police Department has closed the case, stating there was no stabbing and that the wrestler does not want to pursue any criminal complaints. Now, a GoFundMe has been launched to help support the Berwyn Eagles Club. The venue has, again, hosted wrestling for over two decades, but has announced that it will no longer be doing so because of this incident. And the GoFundMe says, due to an incident beyond their control, the venue lost its license and is no longer allowed to host wrestling shows. This sudden change has led to immediate event cancellations, leaving Chuck and the club without their primary source of income. And at last check, they have raised over $1,200 on a goal of $3,000. So it's really sad that, you know, all it takes is one bad apple to spoil it for everybody else. I don't know who started this story. Apparently, some believe it was the promoter, some of the wrestlers. Obviously, the fan sounds like he was acting belligerent. But there's a big difference between acting belligerent or throwing a punch and stabbing somebody. And so because of this one stupid story, all of a sudden, 22 years of wrestling in this venue in that area is out the window. So you're going to have a lot of independent promotions now that have to run other venues and look for other places to host their shows. And then you have a venue here that, I mean, I don't know if this is going to impact their long-term health, if they're going to have to shut down or anything like that, but they have a lot of income now that they're going to have to make up some other way. And for what? Because of something that never even happened. It's very stupid. Anyway, a couple quick questions here, and then we're going to wrap it up. I got a couple of email questions. Ryan wrote in by email. He said, great job with the Uncrowned Wrestling Show. I look forward to it every week. My question to you is, if they play up that Logan Paul has a steel plate in his hand that knocks people out, why does he need brass knuckles? That is a very good question. I don't have a good answer for you. That's a very good observation. And Temjin from New York. Aside from his time in the Filthy Animals in WCW, Rey Mysterio has always been a babyface. Is Rey the only wrestler who has been a babyface only in wrestling? Is he the most natural babyface wrestler of all time? No, I wouldn't say that. And he's not the only one. I mean, the name that comes to mind is Ricky Steamboat. And Steamboat even wanted to go heel at one point when he was in the WWF, and Pat Patterson told him, no. Nobody will ever buy you as a heel. You are as pure white meat of a babyface as you could find, and turning you heel would just not work. So Steamboat never went heel. I might have him, honestly, at the top of the list. The only other name that I could think of, I mean, if we're talking about like big names, and I can't remember them having like a heel run, I mean, look, you had Bruno Sammartino. My God, he was world champion for, what, 8 years? And I can't remember him ever being a heel in his career. Now, that was a different era. Like, if Bruno came along in the television era, who knows? Maybe he would have been, like Big Show. They would have changed him back and forth like 10 times. But I know he was never a heel, and he was a pretty big deal back in his day. So those are the main ones I could think of, though. I really think that most other people, either they started as a heel and then maybe ended up as a babyface, or you know, they flip-flopped a few times. It's very rare to find somebody of any note who was just one or the other and never flipped. It's a very rare thing. One last bit here. I mentioned American Gladiators earlier. That show will be debuting later this week on Amazon Prime, I believe this Friday. And we have the official Gladiator names for season one. We have Wardlow, I mentioned, from AEW. He plays Fang. We have Camille, who just came back to AEW television. She is Hurricane. Eric Bugenhagen. That's right. Rick Boogs, formerly from WWE. He's on the show as well. He's the Bull. Jesse Godders, who wrestled for TNA for many years. He is Steel. Then we have Blaze, Neon, Voltage, Crush, Ace, Striker, Mayhem, Eagle, Supernova, Lightning, Empire, and Huntress. Those are your Gladiators. There's some cool names in there. I do miss, there used to be, oh God, who's some of the other ones? There used to be Nitro was one. I think Flame was another one. Some of the classic, you know, Gladiator names. Look, I was a big American Gladiators kid when I was younger. It would always come on after WWF Superstars. So I have an affinity for it. I know The Miz is hosting the show. I'm going to check it out, see how it is. So that's later this week. For all my other content, subscribe on YouTube. Just search for Solemn Monster Sounds Off. And of course, you could email questions to me, thesolemnmonster@gmail.com. You could tweet me on X with the hashtag Uncrowned. You can find me on there, @Solemnmonster. I am flying out to Las Vegas tomorrow. We've got a House of Glory show Thursday night at the Pearl Theater at the Palms Casino Resort. 8 p.m. local time with a stacked card. We got Bandido, the reigning Ring of Honor world champion, is coming in to wrestle The Amazing Red for the first time ever. You know, it's crazy to me. We still have some people that will, they'll post a comment or they'll send something in and be like, oh man, I had no idea that Amazing Red was still wrestling. I'm like, well, you don't know what you've been missing, because he's been putting in some fucking amazing work over the last couple of years. And so I'm sure this will be no different. We have the Hardy Boys, our HOG tag team champions, defending their titles against Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson. Brody King is coming in to take on Zilla Fatu. Charles Mason defends his HOG world title against Michael Oku, and a lot more. So if you can't be there live, you can watch on Triller TV Plus. I'm not sticking around, though, for WrestleMania. Not at those ticket prices, I'm not. I'm flying back in time to watch each night of WrestleMania, and you're going to get what we'll call a quick little WrestleMania hangover here on Uncrowned the morning after each night. So watch those shows. You can watch for them here on the Ariel Helwani show feed or the dedicated Uncrowned Wrestling show feed. There'll be little updates popping up the following morning. But then next Tuesday, episode 11, I will have a full recap of everything WrestleMania related from this coming weekend. It's going to be a fun time. And if you like what you heard here this week, leave a review for the show on Apple or Spotify. It really helps the show out. Keep killing it. You guys are awesome. I'm Jason Solomon, and when it comes to the news, if you didn't know, now you know. I'll see you this weekend and next Tuesday for more Uncrowned.